You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan, one of the largest volume Nissan dealers in the GTA. Shop the Nissan Now sales event online at ScarboroughNissan.com or in person on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
You're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050, watching on TSN 4. I'm Dave Naylor, sitting in for Brian Hayes. I'm joined in studio by Scott Mitchell, TSN 1050 Blue Jays reporter and SportsCenter anchor Jennifer Hedrick. Good to see you, Jennifer.
Good to see you guys. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Where are the boys, anyways? Where's Hayes?
Parts unknown.
He was at the Jays game yesterday.
Was he tweeting?
Yes.
He tweets on his vacation.
He was Instagramming.
Instagramming.
Well, and obviously, O-Dog is out scouting talent on all four corners of the earth.
I saw him tweeting from Bratislava.
Yes.
One of my favorite cities in the world.
Did a lot of work in Bratislava.
Like yeah.
Yeah. And I think just working. I think O just spends a lot of the summer really pounding the pavement and getting the work done. You know how they always say about athletes, you got to put in the work? O still does that.
I think he pounds a golf ball, too.
Yeah, he does. And the beers.
Yeah, I was going to say, probably.
There's a lot of pounding going on, and it's not the pavement.
Well, they'll be back in here in a few short weeks to... They get the hockey play.
But Noodles is around. Yeah. He's also Instagramming from his palace in Kleinberg, spending some time with his family from the Noodles compound.
Yeah. I love that.
They're all good.
So you were just picking your son up from camp?
I was, yeah. I kind of just raced in here. I did a high five with Pooley as he walked out. I walked in, picking my son up from hockey camp, as all good Canadian mothers do. Jags is 8, so he is a major novice, I guess, going into this year. At hockey camp and loving it. But I got to say, and Scott, I don't know if you'll smile when I say this, but this is my son's first year of rep. Baseball. He is playing double A, I guess it would be called rep baseball.
For who?
For the East York Bulldogs.
Ooh. Joey Votto's old stomping ground.
Is it? Well, here's the thing. I am so glad my son is playing competitive baseball because now I have something to compare it to competitive hockey. And it has been such a breath of fresh air.
Interesting.
Being in the rep baseball environment, it's the same time commitment. It's basically the same amount of money. Like, there's no deals out there. But the pace of baseball is so much better for my son. And for us as parents, we love going to watch him play. The other parents are so supportive of all the kids on the team. There's none of this sort of like parent Olympics that goes on in hockey where there's all this chatter about how much extra your kid is doing outside of the team they're on, right? Like, oh, my kid is on the treadmill and he's got a parachute attached to his back and we're really working on his skating and he's working with Mitch Marner's edges coach and he's doing the shooting clinic with Connor McDavid. And it's like you sit there and go, oh, man, I guess my kid should be doing that. I guess we're not doing enough. There's none of that in baseball. At least not yet. Yeah. Okay, maybe that'll happen when he turns 12 or 13. But as a parent with one child who is in sports, really competitive hockey has been our only world we've been living in for the last couple of years, and it's really been kind of wearing us down. Like it's not a ton of fun, I got to tell you, for any of us, I think, right now. And now that we've done the baseball thing, it's like opened up this fresh whole new world to competitive sports that doesn't have the crazy kooky factor that hockey does.
See, now my girlfriend has a 12-year-old son who plays double-A baseball. And I've gone to a lot of the games, and I know the other parents. And I would just say it's very much the same. Like, if there's a sort of, you know, it's competitive, but there's a real sort of positive spirit around
Absolutely.
It. And not competitive from kid to kid.
No.
Right?
They root for each other.
Right. And her son doesn't play hockey, but a lot of the other kids on the team, they're about to switch over to hockey. And she has kind of the sense that, I'm kind of glad we're not about to switch over to hockey. Mm-hmm. Because of, you know, I've always had a theory on hockey, and I don't mean to run minor hockey down, but it feels like, because kids are identified as pro potential at such a young age, mm-hmm. like 12 or 13 or mm-hmm. maybe younger, it's like there's this race. Like if you aren't getting your 8 or 9 or 10-year-old extra skating lessons or running with a bag on your back or whatever it happens to be, you're not going to make it, right? I mean, I remember this is 10 years ago or so talking to an agent who said to me, he said, you know, 5 years ago, I would have told you I'd never talk to a 14-year-old. Now, if I'm not talking to 14-year-olds, I got to go do something else.
Then what are you doing?
There's no other sport where you're identifying them as pro prospects before they've hit puberty.
But here's the thing.
You can't even compare minor hockey to minor baseball.
I can already tell you, my kid's not going to make the NHL. Like, I have no no preconceived notions that he is. But my kid also wants a little more competition than what House League provides him. He likes going away on tournaments and staying in hotels and getting the trophies at the end and being a little bit more competitive than just sort of like the la-di-da that House League is.
Right.
And it's really hard to find
that in between.
That in between. It's all or nothing. And the thing, and then, and again with baseball, I would say there isn't that pressure. Like, I haven't heard a single parent on my kid's baseball team suggest that their kid's going to make the major leagues.
Yeah,
maybe one of those kids will, but no one is putting their kid in baseball to be Joey Votto. I didn't even know Joey Votto. Like, if that was the arena, there would be a huge billboard of Joey Votto at the end saying, "Hey kids, this could be you if you do this 8 days a week. You know, and you work hard enough, and your parents spend all this money, and you have the $500 bat because a $100 bat's not going to hit a home run. You need to have the five. Like, that just doesn't exist in baseball.
The discussions when I shout out to the 2003 Oshawa Legionnaires, Ontario champions,
everyone's
by the way.
Everyone's favorite Oshawa team.
Exactly. And, I mean, the discussion was always, this guy might get a scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good.
Mm-hmm.
I played against John Axford, and
we
all knew who he was. We all knew who he was. He was never there because he was with the traveling teams and stuff like that, but we knew who he was, and we were like, oh, he might get a scholarship. And then he ends up at Notre Dame. We weren't like, oh, this guy's going to the major leagues.
Right.
You just couldn't fathom that.
I think it's
changed
of our
a little bit these days just because of how much Canadian talent there is.
Right. And maybe that's, and again, some people would say, well, that's the fault of the Canadian system. That's why we don't have as many baseball players, Canadian baseball players. The numbers are growing, but they're certainly nothing like they are in hockey. And maybe if we had this ridiculous system in baseball as we do in hockey, we would
just find a way to monetize
more.
It.
Yeah, but I'm happy with the way.
But you know who doesn't like this whole obsession with, you know, year-round hockey and doing everything you can and committing to one sport at an early age? Hockey Canada.
Hockey, yeah.
You know, like, I remember even when Murray Costello was the head of Hockey Canada, and he left in the mid-90s. I remember interviewing him saying, hey, when you leave, what's the note on the desk say for the next guy coming in? And he said, we got to do something about year-round hockey. Like, it's got to stop, right? And I remember even when there was a stat that the number of soccer players in Canada in minor soccer had passed hockey. And you know what his response was? Good. I hope those hockey players are soccer players who are... The soccer players are hockey players who are doing something else in the summer. When Bob Nicholson left, same thing. Remember talking to him about it.
Yeah.
Year-round hockey. We got to put the brakes on it. This is not good for kids, but parents feel the pressure.
Parents feel the pressure, and some of them play lacrosse. That seems to be
that's
sort
a
of
good
the,
crossover,
the
right? The fitness,
play
the physicality. Yeah.
The lacrosse season is about 6 weeks long.
Yeah. I played lacrosse.
And
so
there's
I know
a
that
reason
one.
Why that is. It's because all these kids have to get back to playing hockey, and there's also ball hockey in the summer, right? So that's kind. I'm like, well, that's not really that much different. They're not on skates, but it's still the same mentality of sport. And this whole hockey obsession, it goes through into the spring now, and it begins early in the fall. And then my kids' hockey camp, one of the guys in the hockey camp has already played two tournaments with his winter team.
Yeah. You're going to burn some talented kids out.
Well,
that's what's going to happen.
You know, it's funny. My dad ran the lacrosse league in Thornhill, Ontario, not far from here, when I was a kid. And this is, you know, 40 years ago. This was... Then there would be lacrosse playoffs, and like one of your best players wasn't there. It's like, why isn't he here? It was a hockey tryout.
Yeah.
So like hockey tryout trumps lacrosse playoffs.
And I will give, I will again, I sound like I'm working for Canada Baseball here right now, and if you're hiring, I guess maybe I could. But
I'll talk to Greg Hamilton.
Okay. The baseball program that my son plays with, it is competitive, as I said, and they begin in January. They do batting cage in January, and they do fielding in a bubble. But they are not trying to work against hockey. They understand that kids play hockey, and if it conflicts with a hockey game or a hockey practice, then you go to a different time in the batting cage. They're always trying to make it work with hockey kids.
That's good. That's
because
smart
they want competitive children. They want the competitive kids to be playing baseball, and they don't want to slam on the door on kids who are competitive and who are playing hockey because you can't commit to both. So I do give baseball the credit for realizing we can't be total hard asses here on participation during the winter months, or we're going to lose out on kids.
Yeah, and you want kids playing multiple sports.
Absolutely.
Right? You want kids getting different experiences, not zoning in on, because if it's all about like trying to get a career out of it from the time you're 9 years of old, then like 99.99% are failures.
Then you're doing radio.
Exactly. That's it. The best.
It's all about the life experience.
When you're a failed athlete.
Yeah.
It's all about the life experience.
The people always ask me, why'd you go into sports media? I said, well, I'm about 14. I realized I don't think I want to play pro sports.
Yeah, that's what I realized.
And I realized it when I was watching the NBA and saw, you know what? There's no women on any of these teams. I'm going to have to start talking about it if I can't do it.
It's worked out pretty well.
It has worked out well, yeah.
Let's talk some NFL because we got Marcellus Wiley who's going to join us after the next break. And, I got to go to the low-hanging fruit here, which is the Antonio Brown.
Baby.
Now, there was an interesting piece on Deadspin today, read by Nate Jackson. I don't know if you remember Nate Jackson. He was a guy. He wrote a book about being being on the bubble for 6 years in the NFL. Like, he was the guy.
Is he a lineman?
No, he's a tight end.
Okay.
He's a tight end. And I forget the name of the book off the top of my head, but maybe our producer Keith can look it up for
me. He's asleep.
Yeah. Okay. Nate Jackson, I remember we had him on the station. He was the guy. The funny line I remember he had was about all the players testing positive for marijuana in the NFL. His suggestion was that they just stop testing and not tell anyone. Mm. Just like, no, don't put it in a news release. Don't declare it. Just stop testing. And 20 years later, someone said, hey, you guys don't test positive for marijuana. They used to. Anyway, he had a lot of interesting things to say.
Kind of like the CFL.
They've never tested.
They've never tested.
No, they got all these, questions last year around October 17th. So what are you going to do now that's legal? We've never tested.
No, we're good.
Nothing's changed. We were ahead of the curve. Yeah.
Progressive, I think.
Absolutely. So anyway, he was talking about how he wrote a piece about kind of in defense of Antonio Bryant and saying, hey, look, when you're a professional football player and you put that helmet on, like you enter kind of another existence. Like it's almost like he kind of made the analogy of like it's like going into battle when you put it on and all of a sudden you're a different person when you do that. And when you change that, it really changes how you feel. And he said like most people would fight if somebody wants to change their brand of coffee that they're going to have. If you're a Starbucks person and they make you drink McDonald's, hey, well, no, if we're going to fight over that, what about the helmet? So did we... I mean, it was very easy to jump on the guy and say, look, he's making $20 million a year, and what's this weird thing with his feet, and he forced his way out of Pittsburgh, and now he doesn't want to wear the helmet. Well, okay, let's strip away the personality here and the diva receiver stuff. Is there a legitimacy to what Nate Jackson is saying about Antonio Brown?
To me, it's look good, feel good, play good. If these guys are, you know, I mean, head injuries are such a big talking point now. If this guy is comfortable in a helmet, and it's sanctioned, and it's legal... And he can find one, like Drew Rosenhaus is going out trying to find him a helmet.
Yeah. Kijiji?
I mean, obviously Amazon's got helmets all over. I mean, if it's his head, if he feels comfortable in a certain helmet for whatever reason, I don't think he should be criticized. Is it dramatic? Yes, very dramatic. But I mean, this is his guy, his livelihood.
Well, and the difference is, and Nate Jackson, by the way, his book was called Slow Getting Up. If you're Nate Jackson and you pull that stunt,
sure.
Next, right?
Sure.
But if you're Antonio Brown, they've got so much money invested in him, then he's going to try and he's got more leverage.
Well, this is the whole special treatment, though, thing, right? And this is Antonio Brown. Like, I think it is 34 guys have had to change their helmets this year. 34 players.
Including Tom Brady.
Yeah, we're wearing helmets. And Aaron Rodgers.
And Aaron Rodgers.
We're wearing helmets that are not deemed to be safe enough anymore. So those guys all have to change their helmets. And I got to think that most of them are going, this sucks. It was kind of like when NHL hockey players were forced to wear face masks. Nobody wanted to do it, but it's your head. Right? It's a safety thing. It was a safety thing for eyes in the NHL, and I'm sure many players still hate wearing the visors. And it's a safety thing in the NFL. And if Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers can suck it up and find a way to make it work, so can Antonio Brown. Except he's Antonio Brown, and he thinks he should get special treatment, no matter what the situation. And I kind of think that his teammates are looking at him right now going, are you kidding me? Like, this is the guy that we signed, old Frosty Feet over here, who can't wear, who doesn't want to wear the helmet, and is suggesting he might retire over it, and then he's not going to retire. Like, it just seems like such a constant distraction. And you can be the best player in the league and still be a good teammate, which I think is what, when you look to Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, right?
These guys. Welcome to the new Oakland Raiders.
Well, he became the story, not just of the Raiders, but like of the NFL preseason, right?
And don't think for a second that he doesn't love it. Like, he loves that. He's not trying. He's not Kawhi Leonard trying to work under the radar. He loves being the story. He loves being on the front of the newspapers. He loves the cameras in his face every day. And we feed the beast. You know, we're talking about him right now.
Absolutely. Like, so that's what I called it, low-hanging fruit. Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's the easiest story in the NFL preseason. And
have we seen the feet lately? Has he given us an update on those frosty toes?
He's practiced.
I haven't
that's
seen
first
this
step,
week's hard
step
knocks.
Number one.
I saw last week's hard knocks.
I haven't watched it yet. I got to wait for DAZN to put it 2 days later.
Okay.
So
now what I want to know.
Is that because you're in Canada? We can't watch it until.
Yeah.
Now, is hard knocks going to Winnipeg with the Raiders? I assume they are.
Yeah, they follow them everywhere.
Hard knocks in the peg.
Oh,
gotta love that.
That sounds like a band, right? And from Winnipeg, give it up for Hard Knocks.
I mean, I just don't understand what the Raiders are doing right now. That's my big question. When you look at what they've done, man,
we'll put that to Marcellus Wiley, our host of FS1's Speak for Yourself, former NFLer, former Buffalo Bill, and some other places as well. He'll join us next here on Overdrive. You're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050, watching on TSN 4. Dave Naylor sitting in for Brian Hayes, joined in studio by Scott Mitchell, our TSN 1050 Jays reporter, also Jennifer Hedger, TSN Sports Center anchor. Time to be joined now by former NFLer on the Maple Toyota Hotline. It's Marcellus Wiley. Marcellus, welcome back to the program. How you doing? Oh, sorry, he's coming.
Oh.
See, I always wait for that. Get that
signal. Hello.
He's there. I think we're dialing. He's
going to
be here in a second.
We're dialing?
Yeah.
We have dialing music.
Do we have dialing music? Can we do a little tap dance? Nothing.
That's
Jennifer's gonna hum.
No. How about I'm gonna take my horse to the old town road. I'm
not bad. Now I gotta say,
till I can't no more.
Do you know how things happen in society where like you hear something for the first time, and then you can't? Like I remember the first time I heard of YouTube,
right.
And all of a sudden for the next month I heard of it every day,
right.
And I'm like, I never heard of this thing a month ago. Now the other one was Uber. I went to the Super Bowl in Arizona like 4 years ago, and someone said, here's a coupon for Uber. I'm like, what? What's this? Then a month later, I'm like, how did I not hear this? Like every day I'm talking. That's with this song. Like
life
2 weeks ago,
I
saw some reference to this song and it being the most popular song in North America. And I'm like, I never heard of this thing.
So
I went on.
Yeah.
And now, since that day, every day
it
comes at me.
You strike me as a big Lil Nas X guy. He's the guy that sings the song. Just the guys in the newsroom
and Billy Ray,
who keep me young.
Yeah.
They were playing the video like in springtime,
right?
And they're like, "Hedge, come take a look."
Springtime.
Oh, these guys are on the butt. They got their finger on the pulse. They play it, and I said, "That's one of the crappiest songs I've ever heard with Billy Ray and this dude. Like, it's just it doesn't even look like they're trying very hard."
I won't lie, I can't stand.
And then Vladdy uses it for his walk-up music.
Yep.
And I think I've heard it six times a day, every day since.
Yep. Can't stand the song. Can't stand his
You know
name.
What? But he must have something with catchy, well, at least Billy Ray. Because, like, remember Achy Breaky Heart drove people nuts like 25 years ago.
I remember the Nelly song with Tim McGraw. That's the original country rap.
Country Grammar.
No.
Is that? Oh, no.
No, they did like a country. It's the same song.
Oh.
But it was 10 years earlier.
Grappler?
Let's find out. We'll find out what Marcellus Wiley thinks of this. He joins us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Marcellus, are you big on country rap?
Take my horse to the old town road.
I'm
till I can't no more.
That song doesn't do much for me.
Yes, thank you.
I will say that I am surprised and I'm happy that it has reached number one status in the longest standing number one spot in Billboard history. That's amazing. And I love the fusion of it. It's just country rap has to still be great. And to me, that song is just kind of good.
It's like they're not trying that hard.
But it's not a very big niche, right? If we had to list the country rap songs.
It's a small category. I do not believe it will have its own country rap category.
10 years from now, the Grammys in the country rap category, the nominees are.
I think that's the problem. Because there's not much to pull from, they played it safe, and they played it too safe for my ears because it didn't sound like they really tried too hard or went too far with it.
And it's really short. Like, I don't know if you've noticed, but it's about
$1.30,
and somewhere near the end, the Lil Nas X says something about something, sports cars and boobies, and so the prepubescent boys just die.
That's the hook.
When they sing the boobies part. And then, so that's the wheelhouse, I think, right
Nelly,
there.
Over and Over, featuring Tim McGraw, 2004.
That's a smart, smart producer said, hey, a minute and a half into this, let's get out of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is not the best thing for us. Yeah, let's get out of this. This may not work. No. Let's go.
That's what they're saying about this segment right now, too.
We better talk some football before they cut us off after a minute and a half. Marcellus, we were doing the debate on Antonio Brown, and I was trying to, for the sake of the debate, I was trying to do the counter-argument here that a football player's helmet is as fundamental as any athlete's piece of equipment, and if you change it on him, he's going to fight to try to keep it. Now, is there an argument for what Antonio Brown tried to do with the NFL?
Oh, there's certainly an argument. You talk about, basically, there are only three pieces of equipment that an athlete has to wear and really has concern over. It's your cleats, it's your shoulder pads, and it's your helmet. And your helmet is the one you hold near and dearest to your heart because, especially at the receiver position, your vision can be impaired depending on where the vision bars are, the face mask, how it's constructed, and more so the comfort. If you don't feel right up top, you don't feel right anywhere. And the same thing can go with someone's cleats, but there's such a variety of cleats out there that it's an easier fix. But, yeah, Antonio had great points. He had two great points. One was that the vision bar, a few other guys have complained about it. Like, I don't want to turn and snap my head back on the deep route and can't see the ball initially because of these new helmets. The new helmets, they're passing safety standards, obviously. His old helmet passed safety standards. But this is his greater point that really got lost. The NFL in 2012 were getting sued by the players for head issues. Mm-hmm. And in 2014, they form an alliance with the Players Association to tackle head issues. 2016, they come out and settle the case. So for $750 million, which has gone up towards billions, that they settled the case. Follow this timeline. Then the NFL says in 2018, you have 1 year to transition from the old helmets to the new helmets. Now, let's be real, guys. If they're really concerned about safety and safety only, would they give you a transitional hazard year? Oh, if you get brain damage in this 1 year, it's okay. But after that, you know what? No more. So Antonio caught that loophole, tried to exploit it. It's impossible to really win against the NFL when they're the judge, jury, and executioner. But he had a tremendous point there that because of that transitional year, well, how reasonable and how concerned really were they with the safety and the head issues?
So when you look at what's going on with Antonio, I mean, the guy freezes his feet off or whatever he did. He's got the he's got the helmet issue. You gave up a third and fifth round pick to get this guy. You gave him a boatload of money. Is he worth it at this point?
Well, it's all in his hands, and I literally mean in his hands in terms of receptions, yards, and touchdowns. As last seen on the football field, he was still amazing, a Hall of Fame talent that you really got for cheap. And you got him for that discount in part because Pittsburgh wanted to get rid of him. So they went bargain shopping, a third and a fifth for a productive Antonio Brown. The Raiders win that. But you got to keep him available on the field, and you got to keep him in tune with the locker room in terms of chemistry. So it's going to be interesting to see what Antonio Brown shows up. Does he show up like last seen in Pittsburgh where he didn't want to play the last game or was late in attendance? Or is he going to still be on this Hall of Fame trajectory that he is on? So I would bet on Antonio Brown not only being a part of this team in terms of chemistry, but being as productive as he's been over his entire career.
Well, it kind of gets to my next question, Marcellus. And what is it like in the locker room when you're already on a team and you bring in a guy like this who has attracted so much attention and most of it negative in his very short time with the team? Does production on the field nullify all of this? Is he everyone's favorite teammate if they're winning, or is it hard to get past all of the drama?
Absolutely, it's easy to get past it based on production. Right. The most popular guys on any team are the best players and the funniest comedians. Whoever got a great personality or you are a baller. Trust me.
Is AB funny? Is he a funny guy? Would guys say that he's a hilarious person to be around?
No, not he doesn't have to win in that column because he just goes out there and gives you 1,500 yards and 10 touchdowns. So you laugh at those jokes as well because he's just so damn productive.
The blonde mustache is funny.
Yeah, right? So the thing about AB, the noise is always louder outside the locker room than it is inside the locker room. You have to remember, there are 53 guys in there that are all different, that are from all walks of life. And there are some knuckleheads who don't get attention for their craziness, but AB gets all of it because he's so productive and he's done some things out of alignment to being a model citizen. So that's how it goes to the world. But in the locker room, we're the meritocracy. We're about production. We're about personality. And we're just about trying to go out there and play the best football. So he certainly checks those boxes inside the locker room. So it's not much of a distraction.
We're in conversation with former NFLer Marcellus Wiley. Okay, I'm going to change gears here for you a second. Eli Manning, Philip Rivers, and Ben Roethlisberger were all taken in the same draft. I believe it is the 2004 draft. And pretty remarkable that 15 years later, they are all still starting quarterbacks in this league. If you had to take one of them at this point in time to ride as your quarterback, which of those three?
Okay, Eli's disqualified. We know that other than last year in spot duties in certain moments, he's not been great since 2015. It's a toss-up between Philip and Ben because I think Ben this year is really going to put his best foot forward, come back in tremendous shape, and really try to quiet all the critics who blamed Antonio. But I like Philip Rivers. So slight edge to Philip Rivers. His lack of mobility comes into play where Big Ben will look down the gun barrel, can even elude a defender or two. I like that about Ben, but Philip Rivers had a tremendous year last year. And if you don't look at the birth certificate, you're still talking upside with Philip Rivers. Mm-hmm. So slight edge with Philip Rivers, even though the body of work, you have to give the nod to Eli over even Roethlisberger because Eli's a two-time Super Bowl MVP, where Roethlisberger's first one, it was a lot of running game and defense. It's a weird man. That's a great question. Roethlisberger has been more consistent probably than all at a high level, but those two Super Bowl MVPs kind of puts Eli in some rare territory.
Based on what you said about where Eli Manning is at this point in his career, do you think he can lose his job to Daniel Jones this season?
I don't think so. I certainly know he starts the season as
sure.
a starter.
Yeah, absolutely.
Unless he just completely lays down. Remember, Eli got benched a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And the result was him starting the week after and two coaches fired.
Yeah.
Like, don't.
Do not touch this
careful.
Button.
Yeah, exactly. He is untouchable. He's a soprano, man. Don't mess with him out there. So
well, that was like John Mara's comments this week, was it not? The owner came out and said he wants to see, I mean, we know what he was trying to say, but he wants to see Eli start every game this year because
that Daniel
means
Jones
that they're
never
winning.
Plays.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Daniel Jones will be starting by week 8.
You think so?
I do.
What did you think of those comments, Marcellus?
I love them because they're actually smart comments that reminds all of us, players included, that this is a business. And Eli Manning is still bankable. So what you have right now are two assets that are bankable. Eli Manning and his legacy that is still a living legacy. And two, hope, which Daniel Jones. You can always sell the fantasy of greater football going forward. But in the meantime, you use up all of Eli Manning in this process. You don't want to rush Eli Manning out the door because he's bankable. And if he's doing well, then the team is doing well, allowing a young Daniel Jones, who had his own issues in terms of resume leaving college, time to learn the NFL game. Let's not get deluded by a one-drive, five-play series for a touchdown that Daniel Jones is now ready in a preseason game for the NFL. That's what's crazy about the noise. It's so loud outside. Inside, the evaluators and the players are like, hold your horses here. Let's use up Eli as much as we can before we give the reins to Daniel Jones.
I mean, do you believe that, that rookie quarterbacks get... I mean, it's like I remember 25 years ago, 20 years ago, it was a customary for a guy to be drafted, sit for a year or two, and then play high in the draft. I mean, Aaron Rodgers, we know, did it because of the circumstance around around Brett Favre, but that was more circumstantial, I think, than it was design. We've seen all kinds of guys. I mean, E.J. Manuel in Buffalo,
Steve McNair, you know,
came in and started like right out of college and was out of the league, basically, or out of certainly out of Buffalo a couple of years later. It was clear he wasn't ready. Do teams still feel that pressure to, hey, we spent a first-round draft pick on the quarterback, the fans and the owner want to see him in week number one, we're going to make that happen?
Yeah, they do feel that pressure because they're trying to sell that hope. And usually teams that are drafting quarterbacks, drafting high, are lowly teams, bad teams. So they need to change the narrative and change it fast. So it's a testament to these young players that are coming up. I will say it all the time that players are bigger, faster, stronger, and smarter by this generation. Doesn't always translate to better football necessarily, but in terms of talent and the elements that come with talent, oh, it gets better every generation. And you can see these youngsters. I know 8-year-olds now that can break down cover 2, cover 1, cover 3. 8 years old. I didn't learn that till like my senior year of college. And even then, I was foggy on it. I was like, I don't get it all. But it's just a different animal. They consume the sport at a much younger age between video games and parent involvement. They get it, and they hit the ground running. If you wait 3 years, who knows if the guy's ready? So if you believe that the guy can be ready day one, roll the dice like you would in 3-4 years and see what you got.
Marcellus, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate your time.
All right. Take care, Toronto. Talk to you soon.
There he is, former NFLer Marcellus Wiley. He joined us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Are you leasing a Toyota? You could qualify for a brand new Toyota at no extra cost during Maple Toyota's lease renewal event. Visit mapletoyota.com/lease. When we continue, we will wrap up this edition of Overdrive. Coming up in just a moment, you're listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050, watching on TSN 4. Back to wrap up this edition of Overdrive. I'm Dave Naylor, sitting in for the vacationing Brian Hayes, joined by Scott Mitchell, our TSN 1050 Jays reporter in studio, and also SportsCenter anchor Jennifer Hedger. It is time now for today's Best Bets, brought to you by ProLine. I have got the Visitor Plus Chicago over Philadelphia. I got the Home Plus Yankees over Cleveland, and I've got Minnesota over Texas. So you put $20 on that, get all three right, it pays $105.40. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio. That's at TSN 1050 Radio. You can get way into the game with ProLine. It's a sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine. Get way into the game. And Scotty, since we've got you here, we're going to continue talking some baseball. And I want you to, we were talking a little bit about Bo Bichette, who there's been a fascination about. And I think for a couple of reasons. Like, one, his name has been out there for a while, right? Even before anybody had ever seen him play or knew what he looked like, he was the kind of 1A of the Vladdy Guerrero side. And you got the dads from the major league background. And then he comes up and, you know, it's like he's from the natural or something, right? And he's got the look and he's got the confidence and all this. Yeah. But tell us the story of how he fell to the Blue Jays at 66th in the draft.
Yeah, I mean, we're at the point now where obviously he's much better than the 66th pick, and he should have been a top 10 pick. And, you know, he was talked about as a top 50 guy, and he was a real good prospect coming out of Florida, high school in Florida. And what happened was a lot of teams wanted to change his swing. He's got a unique swing where he's got that Josh Donaldson-esque load. There's a lot of moving parts. We've seen how hard he swings. Mm-hmm. That usually doesn't translate from the high school ranks to pro baseball. So during the 2016 draft, the Blue Jays are trying to get him. They liked him. Their scouting staff that was in place from Alex Anthopoulos really, really liked him. And one of the things they told his camp was, hey, keep your swing, keep your mechanics, do your own thing. Until you fail, we'll let you do that. We like it. And he slid, and a bunch of other teams talked to him. They wanted to tweak his swing. They wanted to calm down that bat. They wanted to tweak the leg kick, everything like that. The Blue Jays said, hey, we love it. Do your thing.
That's a great line. Like, I mean, like, why would you mess with it until it fails? If there may be a point that he has to adjust. There still may be a point he has to adjust in his life.
Sure, career. But, and the Blue Jays have tried to tweak it. In Double A, they said...
They did try and tweak it?
They tried to tweak his approach. They wanted him... They saw him calm it down on two strikes. And he was hitting so well with two strikes, they said, why don't you do that? And he told the story, and he's told this a couple times over the last 2 weeks. He said, would you try to change Tiger Woods' swing? He can go out and rip it 375 yards, and if he sprays it a little bit, he's so comfortable with his short game that he doesn't need to change off the tee. Hmm. So the way Bo looks at it, before I have two strikes on me, I'm gripping and ripping and trying to hit a double, trying to hit one, you know, 450 feet. Because I'm so confident with two strikes that I can shorten up and make contact and still make solid contact. So, I mean, this guy thinks hitting in a different way, and that's why he's been compared to Donaldson and Jose Bautista, even hitting coach Guillermo Martinez. I talked about this in a TV hit last week. He looks a lot like him, and he thinks hitting a lot like those guys, and that's so impressive. And the Blue Jays, what happened was Ross Atkins came in. They had been hired late in 2015. In 2016, there were still some scouts left over from the Anthopoulos era. They got up, they pounded the table, and Ross Atkins said, look, we like this kid too. We're going to take him. And 3 years later, here he's in the big leagues.
So compare him to Vladdy for us, because Vladdy was the hitter that was being pumped up so much, and maybe rightfully so. I kind of feel like he hasn't lived up to expectations because our expectations were so high. There was a sense that he was going to press for Rookie of the Year, and he was going to take the Major League Baseball world by storm, and it just didn't really happen. Now, obviously, he had a great home run derby, you know, for whatever that's worth. That was fun to watch, and that was great, but it doesn't really seem to me, and maybe we were expecting too much out of him in his first year, but he was supposed to be the guy that was going to be the real pure hitter, and now Bo has kind of stepped in and taken all the headlines from him, really, since he came up, Bo Bichette. So how would you compare and contrast the two as hitters?
It's interesting. You're right. The expectations for Vladdy were just so sky high that the kid is a 20-year-old hitting 270-plus right now, when most 20-year-old kids are, you know, in their freshman year of college.
Right.
So it's unbelievable what he's done, and quietly. But the amazing part is we talked the last 2 years about how Vladdy was kind of overshadowing Bo.
Right.
And Vladdy got all the headlines. We'd go to Bo and be like, hey, what do you think of Vladdy? This kid was a top 10 prospect in his own right in the game. If Vladdy didn't exist, we would have been talking about Bo Bichette so much more. And, you know, the two things are, I think... You nailed it. The expectations for Vladdy were so high that we're not even, you know, we're looking at a 270 average right now. We're going, eh.
Yeah, what have you done
but
lately?
That's unbelievable. And the fact is, it's 17 games for Bo Bichette. There are going to be adjustment periods, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's soon. I mean, he is going to have to adjust. Major league pitchers are going to look at his approach, what he's doing, you know, early in at-bats, and he's getting pitches to hit. Vladdy came with such a reputation. They were pitching him at like it was a postseason game from day one. They were nibbling off the corner. He was...
Because they thought he was going to embarrass them over and over and over.
Because
again,
you see that bat speed. You watch that at bat against Aroldis Chapman. You see the type of bat speed and power that he has. And pitchers were immediately... He already had a reputation as the number one prospect in baseball. Bo's a little bit under the radar, so he's getting some pitches to hit, and he's doing what he should be doing with them. But it's going to be interesting to see how he adjusts, because Vladdy had to adjust, and the second half, he's coming out of the on fire. Mm-hmm. And if it weren't for Bo, we'd be talking more about Vladdy. So these guys are just... They're just alternating in the spotlight, and it's been really interesting to see, because they're such good friends and teammates and have played together so long.
Well, that's interesting, because really Vladdy doesn't speak English, so how could they be friends?
Hey, you can be friends with anybody, no matter what they speak.
I've been told that Vladdy might speak a little bit more English than he lets on.
Wasn't that true of his father? Like, most of the guys who, you know, come from the Dominican and such, they learn to speak. But Vladdy Sr. never did interviews in English, did he?
No, and that's the thing. It's been
or French, since he played Montreal.
Vladdy, when you're around the cage, he talks to you all the time.
Right.
He'll make fun of you. He talks to teammates. I remember being in the Arizona Fall League last year, and Cole Tucker, great shortstop prospect with the Pittsburgh Pirates. I said, how's it like, communicating with Vladdy? He goes, what do you mean? And I said, well, I mean, he doesn't speak great English, and, you know, he's just not really comfortable right. with it. He goes, not comfortable with it? He goes, you should see him in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
And he is very comfortable. And I asked him, I did a little interview, I said, do you eventually, because Edwin Encarnacion did the same thing, mm-hmm. wasn't comfortable with it, wasn't comfortable in front of the media. Eventually, he put it on himself. He goes, I want to do some interviews in English. And that's where Vladdy's trending. He's 20 years old, so he's a kid.
He's young, yeah.
And but he wants to speak more English, and eventually you're going to see him in front of the cameras trying it.
I believe David Ortiz had a translator like right
for
through
a
to the
time,
end.
Right?
Did yeah. he not? Almost until the end. Manny Ramirez as well. Mm-hmm. It's yeah. it's a little bit of a buffer, I think, for
some,
these
yeah,
guys.
Some guys can yeah. use it as a get-out-of-jail free card.
They look at it media. As a crutch.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they'll have their translator, Tito LeBron, and I'll ask Vladdy a question, and if there's any sort of comedic aspect to it, he'll start laughing.
Right, right.
And then look at the translator, and I'm like, he knows what I'm saying.
Yeah.
but it's just, it gives him some time, it gives him a little bit more comfort zone to be able to think about it and answer the way he wants.
Didn't it kind of like contribute to the sort of mysterious aura around his dad? Like, his dad was a freakish player, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Like,
mm-hmm.
totally built different,
yep.
but just a guy you just felt like you were watching a phenomenon, right? And the fact that he never gave interviews and you never knew what he thought about anything. He just showed up every day and played like few people we've ever seen. It almost like contributed to sort of this magic aura around Vladimir Guerrero.
I would say that the 2019 version of that is not being on social media.
Yeah.
It's being Kawhi Leonard. It's like, who is this guy?
Right.
He's such a mystery. Well, not really. He just doesn't publicize his entire life on social media to everybody, which most athletes do.
And that's the thing. Vladdy's very active on social media, and it's going to be interesting to see the dynamic and see how he really, you know, finds himself in that kind of aspect, mm-hmm. because he's had so much attention, and I think he's really, really handled it well.
Does he like it? Is he one of these PK Subban-y kind of guys who likes the spotlight?
A little bit. There's a little bit to him, but there's a little bit of shyness in him, kind of like his dad, but there's definitely a showmanship to him.
Right.
When you see him swing, when you see him hit that triple the other day,
right.
he's got some showman in him.
Right.
And as he,
the hand
as,
clap.
As he grows and
gets
a little more comfortable, you're going to see more than that. He's very demonstrative in the box. And I actually, that was one of the things I noticed when he was struggling in May and June, was the smile went away and his mannerisms totally changed because he was pressing mm-hmm. so hard to make an impact. And now you're starting to see that come back, and he's very demonstrative in the box. In the minors, he'll watch pitches all the way through and look back at the umpire and have more of a reaction than he has. So it's going to be fun to see these guys because they're all different guys. The way I put it is, Kevin Biggio is the conscience. He is the mature beyond his years leader, the voice in that room. Mm-hmm. Bo Bichette is the kid with the swag. And Vladimir Guerrero is just the talent that is going
power.
To go out there and rake and have a smile on his face.
I mean, when you think of it, for a team that, you know, I remember going to a Jays game in April, and it was like the most anonymous group of Blue Jays I'd ever seen in my life.
Programs? Yeah. Yes, please. I'll take a
scaffolding. Program. Scaffold. And you look at it now that these guys not only have the name, not only have the abilities, but they all have the image, too. Like, they've got their own defined image. So if you're trying to sort of re-engage a fan base,
It's a good start.
It is. It's a pretty good start.
Pick your favorite. They're all different, and they all bring different elements and
aspects. The only thing they can't do is pitch.
Oof. Yeah, we got that to worry about. That'll be another show. Jen, thanks for doing this.
Pleasure.
Scott, thanks for dropping
anytime.
In so much. All right, Brian Hayes. As I say, it's been a pleasure to sit in hosting Overdrive for him this afternoon. You've been listening to Overdrive on TSN 1050, watching on TSN 2.
You've been listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3, powered by Scarborough Nissan, one of the largest volume Nissan dealers in the GTA. Shop the Nissan Now sales event online at ScarboroughNissan.com or in person on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden.
Scarborough Nissan is one of the largest volume Nissan dealers in the GTA. They've been open at the same location since 1989. And it's not just the amazing vehicles that keep people coming back.
During the Nissan Now sales event, get lease or finance rates from 0% APR for up to 84 months on the Nissan you want now. Like the 2019 Rogue, Qashqai, Kicks, or Sentra. Plus, get up to $5,000 standard rate finance cash.
Visit Scarborough Nissan on Eglinton Avenue East at Warden Avenue. ScarboroughNissan.com.